I don't know that you want to marry Sally, but if she was just tossed into the bargain, I think you probably wouldn't say no.
I mean, I guess not.
If they were going to be sister wives anyway, you could do worse.
Yeah, I could definitely do worse. But I don't know that I have to worry about this. I think this is just you being weird about your friends hanging out without you.
I don't think it should be allowed under the law. There ought to be a law. You know? You think that's weird? You think that's strange?
It'd be a strange law.
It would be. How do you feel when me and Tyler hang out without you?
I feel like one of these days you guys are going to get married.
That would be awesome. That would really change his life. And then
you won't be my brother husbands.
We could be your brother husbands.
Aw.
If you wanted that. It sounds like you don't really want to engage in polygamy of any sort.
I would, maybe.
Okay. We'll work it out.
My attitude towards it is it would have to feel right.
I think that's a good rule.
Yeah.
Just in general. But you know what else is a good rule?
What's that?
Staying awake when you watch the movies you're supposed to report upon. I didn't.
Well, thankfully I did.
Yeah.
Somehow.
I watched, I think like the first half, maybe like the first 40 minutes of it. And then I guess I must have dozed off. But me and Sally were hanging out watching these films. And she kind of shook me awake and was like, hey, do you want to wake up? And I was like, oh, this is that. And as I woke up, the film was ending. But I noticed that there was 20 minutes left on your thing. And I guess there's just an interview with Bob Chin tacked on at the end there.
Yeah, this DVD release. This DVD release of Johnny Wad is weird. It has a 4.1 audio track, which is a weird configuration.
Okay, I was going to say there was something off about the audio.
I think that they overdubbed some of the music.
That's also what because I've seen enough porn now. I know what sounds like porn music from 1971.
Right.
And what sounds like porn music from maybe like 1988.
So in like your standard run-of-the-mill like studio films and stuff, when they do re-releases of films with like surround soundtracks that didn't originally have surround soundtracks, mm-hmm. You know, if you're lucky, they'll have all of the original audio elements and be able to configure one that's really well done and like true to the original but immersive.
Yeah,
but more often than not they don't, so you end up with like some weird stuff. Like they'll overlay clean versions of the music that was there originally, but like it'll be a lot louder than it was in the original track and like drown out the dialogue. Or in some movies you hear like different sound effects, like the gunshots sound different than the original mono or stereo soundtrack, and yeah. Just like there's a lot of fuckery, and that's why I generally try to
replace all the gun sound effects with ones from the Hanna-Barbera sound library.
They replace all the gun they replace all the gun sound effects with walkie-talkie sound effects.
Yeah, that's good. That's a machine gun.
Generally, I try to listen to the original audio track when that's available for that reason. But this sounds like, regardless, this is kind of a fucky version of that. And obviously, this doesn't have the budget for the audio restoration that Warner Brothers would have had, for example. So yeah. I don't know if the music that's overlaid in this is just the original music that was used here, just, you know, overlaid with a better transfer of that. And I don't know if them overlaying the music got rid of original sound effects and stuff. I kind of bet that like those scenes probably didn't have sound effects to begin with.
The only effects you were hearing was the creaking of a very loud couch usually.
Yeah, that and like moans and gasps and stuff. But yeah, like when the music kicks in, you stop hearing all of that too. But I could imagine that this might not have been recorded with audio anyway, because I think that it seems like it's all dubbed over anyway.
Yeah.
But regardless, yeah, the sound was a little weird on this, and it's not the best quality visual presentation either, but it's not terrible.
And it made me think this movie was an unmerciful hour and 40 minutes long at first.
Oh, yeah, because it had
the interviews just tacked on there at the end. Yeah. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. But, of course, this is the Raincoat Report.
Oh, yeah. This is the Raincoat Report. And did we even say what we were talking about?
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, kind of. I think we've been oblique, and they can look at the episode name. But
Well,
this is Jeremy. That's Boss.
Yes.
And this week, we're tackling 1971's Johnny Watt.
Yes. So, you know, we're big cinephiles on this podcast.
Yeah.
As our history will tell you, our second most listened to episode after the first episode is our episode about Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls, and that is still the case today.
That seems to be maybe just the most, maybe the greatest porn film of all time.
Perhaps. It's in the running.
Did I tell you I wore my Hot and Saucy shirt to the Ren Faire last year?
Oh, yeah.
It was at the Ohio one, because they have theirs in the fall, and, you know, it's like that quarter length sleeve. So,
yeah.
But some guy said nice shirt, like, in passing. So, I don't know, maybe he was a raincoater.
Maybe.
At the very least, he's familiar with the sauce material.
Was he wearing a raincoat by chance?
He was probably wearing a kilt.
Oh, yeah.
Or some variation thereof.
Fair enough.
But,
were you wearing a kilt with your Pizza Girl shirt?
I was.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's, I do a very casual Ren Faire look. I don't have, like, armor.
That's fair. That's probably really hot.
Yeah, it's, I do see people sometimes, like, in, like, full leather armor in our Ren Faire, which is in June and July.
Yeah.
I don't understand how they do it. They're also drinking the whole time. It seems like a bad combination.
Yeah.
I did see a guy get wheeled out one time because he got, like, wasted.
Did they throw him on the cart that they carry the dead out on?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. They piled him right up on top of there. But yeah, Johnny Wad, Cinephiles, Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls, to wind it all back. I've been gifted a novelization of the second one?
Yeah, I believe it was the second one.
Okay, yeah, the second one. Flesh of the Lotus, which we're not covering this week, but by the time we cover that, we'll have read this as well, and I can, I don't know, maybe we'll have like a separate book club episode.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
A companion piece, you know?
But yeah, Vinegar Syndrome offered on their website this month the Bob Chin novelization of Flesh of the Lotus, we had to pick it up.
One thing I don't like about new books is they tell you, like, exactly when they're printed.
Oh, yeah.
So this one was printed on the 10th of February.
Of this year?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a couple days ago. A couple weeks ago. This book's new.
Wow.
This is hot off the presses.
Yeah.
Still
feel a little toasty?
Yeah. It's burning me. I'm going to touch the other book I brought. Because I also have... thanks to Boss, once again, I have Bob Chin's The Other Side of Paradise. It's the Uncensored Memories of Bob Chin.
Oh, yeah. I think that we should add that Flesh of the Lotus was brought to us, the novelization was brought to us by our patrons at patreon.com/raincoatreport.
Oh, yeah.
Fund that, as well as my purchase of all of the clearanced Vinegar Syndrome DVDs that I did not have that were on sale as part of their Valentine's Day sale.
Yeah, it's quite a lot to choose from. We're definitely going to have to get to Sherlock Holmes pretty quick.
Okay.
I want to do that one soon.
Okay, we'll have to do that. But patrons, you helped fund that. Thank you. And if you want to help fund us purchasing more material to cover on the show, patreon.com/raincoatreport. Mm. For $5 a month, you can get two bonus episodes every month, like this Friday's episode where we cover a 2007 adult film starring somebody who took the nation by storm a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And caused political chaos.
I can't think of anybody funny. Was it Bob Chin?
Yes, it was Bob Chin. No. Oh.
No, I know Bob who it Chin is.
Wrote the book that you're looking at.
Yeah, The Other Side of Paradise.
Yes.
It's volumes 1 and 2. It's very thick. I think I last maybe referenced it for one of the Hayapatia Lee films we covered. But he didn't have a whole bunch to say except maybe some rude words to Bud Lee about pimping out his wife. But he has more to say about Johnny Wide. It was probably, I suppose, his most famous creation, aside from the Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls.
Yeah, probably. I would say
they probably rank about equally. There are 9 of these? 8 or 9?
Something like that. There's quite a few. And there was like, a 2000s revival of the series, of course not including John Holmes on account of his death.
I do think like the last one before that might have been directed by John Holmes, and he with like permission from Bob Chin.
That makes sense. But yeah, there's several of them, and I assume that they get much better over time to warrant their reputation. As this one is something created early in John Holmes' career, or in Bob Chin's career.
Both.
Yes, both. But, you know, this definitely isn't the peak of Bob Chin's filmmaking. But, you know, you got to start from somewhere.
Yeah, he says in this book, which is, I'm going to go on a little tangent, this book's hard to use.
Okay.
Trying to look for, like, anything in it. There's not an index, which I always find, I like an index. I like a nice index. I like to look back there, look for a keyword, see what page it's on. But failing that, I'll consult the table of contents. But in this case, the table of contents is pretty bare.
Yeah.
It says chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, and so forth, with no headings or subheadings to break anything up or clarify what material would be covered in each of these. And it really does begin like from the beginning, like from the moment he's born. And it takes about several hundred pages to get to his like adult film life.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're like 175 pages in before he starts talking about any of that. Anyway, no index, no table of contents, but there is a handy filmography in the back that has the year a film is made. And the chapter headings themselves do contain the years described. So with a little light detective work, you can find what you want in this book. But, yeah, that is to say, he was saying pretty much at this time they were just shooting, like, faux documentary films still. Like, pretending to be, like, Danish educational sex films and like that. And
yeah,
they would get, like, $750, would be, like, the budget shoot, and they would have, like, a day.
Right.
To get them done. So this was his, like, first or one of the first attempts to, like, kind of step out and do something, like, actually creative.
Yeah.
I guess still working within those limitations. This is what we, he was able to transmit to us.
Yeah. I think that in the past I brought up that, like, sometimes when I think about porn films, I think about before Deep Throat and after Deep Throat. And this is before Deep Throat for context. So, yeah. You know, this is still where we're kind of figuring out what a narrative porn film is. And, you know, there is a narrative here and there is porn. So it's accomplished in that sense. And of course it has our pal John Holmes and his fat hog in it. So
yeah, he goes on. Yeah. To talk about that and how the first time he met him, he was like this skinny white nerd. And then I guess the scene that's, I need to see it still, the scene immortalized in Boogie Nights. He's like, Bob, you got to take a look at this guy's cock.
Yeah.
But I think it's Mark Wahlberg in that, right?
I don't wanna, I think so.
That's probably why I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I've I've almost watched it several times, but it's like 2.5 hours.
I've gotten around to enjoying, if I put on like a 2-hour movie and I'm just kind of idling or like doing some of my artwork, I can enjoy like a 2.5-hour film.
Okay.
I've come around since a couple of years ago where I wanted them fast and sloppy. I still want my porn to be about 90 minutes. I feel like that's about the perfect time for like porn and horror movies. But get something with a little more depth, a little more meat. I think 2 hours can work.
I watched Poor Things last night.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
It was really good. I liked it a lot.
The only thing I've seen about it so far has been on Twitter and someone just going on about how misogynistic it was. But it sounds like an insane film that I need to see soon based on their description of it.
I liked it a lot. It's nuts. It's one of those films that comes out every once in a while where a studio makes a crazy-ass film and you're like, oh, good, this still happens every once in a while.
It's good. We should support that no matter how misogynistic it is, I guess.
The funny thing is the digital version of the film starts with a warning that says, contains tobacco use.
That's pretty funny.
Which, of all of the crazy shit that happens in this movie, the fact that that's what they called out at the beginning as a disclaimer is pretty nuts.
Well, you know, a lot of kids are going to be watching it, and they're pretty impressionable.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to make sure to tell the kids that are watching Poor Things that
smoking is not cool.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It doesn't even say that, though. It just says contains tobacco use, and it's like, okay.
I don't really...
It doesn't even say, tobacco is bad, don't do it, kids.
That's funny. That seems like the kind of thing they would, like, slap up on, like... You're, like, watching it, like, on Disney Plus, and you're watching, like, a film from, like, 1955.
Yeah.
Not on what sounds like an incredibly fucked up body horror film.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's Johnny Wadd.
Yeah, that's Johnny Wadd for you.
It was a nightmare of flesh.
Yes, it is. This is a nightmare of flesh, different from the nightmare of flesh in Poor Things, but...
I don't know. I wouldn't call this one a nightmare. I slept quite easily.
A cozy dream of flesh.
I made me feel a warm shiver when you said that. It's like a raincoat for my soul.
Aw. Well, with that being the case, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and Jeremy might take a little nap, and then we'll be back to talk a little bit more about Johnny Wadd.
My name is Johnny Wadd. I'm a private detective. It was one of those slow days where there was very little action, very little money, and very little pussy. A fog was coming in from the ocean and settling over the beach. Everything was dismal and quiet. Little did I know that in a few minutes, a phone call would begin the hottest and most dangerous case of my career. Hello, Johnny Wadd. Yes, lady. Yeah, I'm a private dick. Right, for hire. Yes, I'm available.
You wouldn't want to miss a big rock like that.
No. Not like... That was in the middle of Meteor Madness.
It was going to wipe out the Earth.
We had Armageddon, and then we had the other one.
And then we had the Heaven's Gate.
Oh, yeah. I guess that we did have Heaven's Gate around then.
They were subject to Meteor Madness for sure.
What was the other movie? The other, was it just like Asteroid or something?
Deep Impact?
Deep Impact. That's what it was.
And there's also Space Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
There were several. People were, before 9/11, after the Cold War and before 9/11, we didn't know what to be afraid of. So there was like a period of like resurgence of disaster films in the 90s.
Well, it's like 90s. When we had like Dante's Peak and
Volcano. Yeah. You have, I feel like there was another one. Was there a compliment to Twister?
I don't know. I feel like Twister...
I think I might have kicked it off. I think I might have
Twister might have kicked off the bigger disaster...
Wave. Yeah.
Wave.
It's like the butterfly effect.
I mean, in a way, Independence Day is kind of a disaster movie.
Yeah, but they were aliens. It's not a natural disaster.
No, it's just a disaster.
There was another enemy we were looking for. You gotta look to the skies. They're bringing that shit back, though.
The aliens?
Yeah, the government's always talking about aliens and shit now.
Didn't the Mexican government reveal a bunch of, like, pictures of aliens and shit, and everybody was just kind of forgot about it?
They were, very crudely made mummies that might have been, like, kind of, like, kitbashed together from, like, actual child mummies.
Oh, okay.
Or something like that. There was something very odd about them, but I kind of liked them. They looked like little, like, Gumby creatures, and I was like, if that's what's out there, that's fine. But you know what's in here? It's a bunch of wads.
Well, speaking of wads, the mm-hmm. wad of the day, of course, is Johnny Wad.
Yeah.
And so the film Johnny Wad opens on some title cards, mm-hmm. and we get told from California to the Rio Grande, he shot his wad all over the land.
That's beautiful.
And then we get our Johnny Wad title card.
That makes it sound like we might be getting like a Western, though.
Yeah, it does.
And that would be kind of fun. The historical Johnny Wad.
Yeah. Well, instead we had a more modern day Western.
Yeah. And we had to watch the Casanova films. I've seen enough period John Holmes.
We see Johnny driving around in his car to some choral piano music. Johnny parks in a garage and walks into his home, tossing his hat aside and setting his coat on a chair before splashing himself some Jim Beam.
Yeah.
Fan of the brown.
Yeah, but not actually. I don't know if we've talked about this before on the show, but he did not drink.
Oh.
I think he was like, at that point, he was like real into working out. This must have been before like he got like real deeply hooked on hard drugs.
Yeah, I'd imagine this is early enough in his career.
Yeah, because it's funny because it goes on like that. Like he's like, I'm not drinking this. So they had to like stop the shoot while they like boiled some tea to like make fake Jim Beam. And then later on, after the shoot was done, one of the girls had a joint and offered it to him. And he's like, no, that stuff's bad for you.
What a narc.
Yeah. But,
well, he didn't tell on him, but still.
Yeah. Well, no, but,
just lame.
He's just lame, but it's just funny knowing like
where he went.
Yeah. I'm just like, come on, buddy. He should have been looser back then. Things might have turned out differently.
Well, after Johnny has a few swallows of the brown, acted or otherwise.
We also don't have any brown in remembrance of Johnny Wad.
Yes, maybe next episode.
Maybe next episode there will be a little brown to spread around.
But less brown than last time. Any of our patrons would know from our last Patreon episode, Jeremy ended up having to step away before the episode was done.
Yeah, I tapped out. I wasn't too drunk. I don't know. It felt like my intestines were being attacked suddenly. And it's not like we drank much. We had like a little bit in the one episode and then poured a little bit more for the Patreon.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I had to like go lay down and watch Starship Troopers. I'm dying.
But Johnny sits on the couch and lights a cigarette. He introduces himself in narration as a private dick. It was a slow day of very little pussy, we're told. And we're told in a few minutes a call would set up the most dangerous case of his career. We watch Johnny answer the phone, and it's a call from someone whose girlfriend is missing. He tells them to come over and that he'll be there all day, so he pours some more brown. We cut to later, and Johnny's talking to Miss Bellamy, played by Andy Bellamy, about the missing girl, Jenny Hamilton. She's been missing for a week, but for some reason her family hasn't called the police. Miss Bellamy says that she thinks that she's been kidnapped and provides Johnny with a photo of her. Johnny tells her that he can find her, but he's very expensive. She offers him $1,000 as a retainer, And Johnny says he thinks that they'll get along just fine. In fact, he thinks they'll get along so fine that he tells her that he thinks she's very attractive.
Oh.
She says thanks, but she's sure he finds all girls attractive. Johnny says that a private eye's reputation isn't as bad as TV makes it seem to be. Miss Bellamy adds that he probably meets a lot of immoral women, and Johnny starts to make a move. He tells her that if he had some personal incentive, he might be able to work on this faster. So Johnny starts to kiss Miss Bellamy. She tells him that she hardly knows him, and he tells her it shouldn't take long for them to be great friends.
Yeah, and the entire time the couch creaks away under them.
So Johnny is very forward, and Miss Bellamy is not so into it at first. Johnny pulls off Miss Bellamy's jacket and makes out with her more, groping her breasts. He then pulls off her shirt and unfastens her bra. They kiss more, and the camera meanders around like a Jess Franco movie. Johnny slides down Miss Bellamy's skirt and untucks his shirt before asking her to give him a little head. She's a bit hesitant, but quickly slides off Johnny's pants to reveal his rod. She begins to lick and suck his cock. Johnny says, "Oh, Miss Bellamy," and then some drummy music kicks in as she slowly sucks and strokes his cock, only able to really fit his cock head in her mouth at first.
Yeah, there's this like these bongos that repeat occasionally throughout.
Yeah.
This bongo-y drum music, and I think that's like, I think the other track that plays is either, like you said, like restored or something in some way.
Yeah.
However you know, all the audiophile bullshit you were saying earlier. or the other track is like new, because it sounds very different than the,
yeah,
like just like the style and like hearing it within the film, it sounds, I don't know, the other thing sounds dropped in.
Yeah, yeah. Miss Bellamy expresses concern that his cock may split her in two, but he tells her not to worry and to let him show her. Miss Bellamy sucks his cock more. She asks if all detectives are this big. He tells her he hopes not. Competition's bad enough as it is.
I think in this he's fully hard in a way we haven't really seen him before.
Yes, again, this is probably before his cocaine
habit just really tanked his,
yeah,
his ability to keep it up for too long. Yeah, because later on, he's definitely got more of, like, that big, like, flesh loofah kind of thing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And here, it's a proud, strong, upthrust cock.
She sucks him more and asks if she's doing a good job for her first try. He tells her she has a natural talent. After a bit more sucking, they stand up and Johnny takes his pants the rest of the way off, and Miss Bellamy unties her knee-high boots, with Johnny joining in to help expedite the process. Eventually, we get a hard cut to them completely naked. He lays Miss Bellamy back on the couch. She tells him that she's afraid, and Johnny assures her that while he's a rough detective, he's a gentle lover. He uses some sort of cream or jelly, I guess, to lube up her vagina a bit. Mm-hmm. Then he starts to rub his cock against her labia a bit before finally penetrating her. She calls out that it's so big and moans softly as he slowly fucks her. This goes on for a couple of minutes, and they eventually work up to fucking pretty hard. They reposition, and Miss Bellamy rides Johnny's cock cowgirl. After a couple of minutes of this, Miss Bellamy turns around and leans back, riding Johnny reverse cowgirl as he plays with her clit. Johnny fucks her missionary a bit more before pulling out and dribbling cum on her tits.
Yeah.
Miss Bellamy yells something about it being like a warm shower.
Yeah, it's not a lot of cum, which is funny because in the book, part of how they come up with the name is Bob Chin's writing partner, Alan Patrick, I think. I was like, wow, imagine how big a wad a guy with a dick like that could shoot. And I think that's not really, I don't think that's quite how physiological stuff works, like anatomy and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't think if you have a big dick, you're going to shoot like a mountain.
No, probably not.
But if you're in porn, you can probably shoot a bigger than average load generally.
Yeah.
I feel like they look for that. but it was 1971, so mistakes were made, and that's how we ended up with John Holmes.
Well, I'm sure his loads got bigger as the years went on.
Yeah.
We cut to Johnny telling Miss Bellamy not to worry and to just wait for his phone call. He thanks her for that incentive, and she tells him, "My pleasure." We get more of Johnny's narration talking about how he called some of his contacts and heard from a junkie, Mickey the Mooch, that saw a woman matching her description being pushed into a black car by a man with dark hair. Johnny said it wasn't much to go on, but it was all he had. We're also told that Mickey apparently needed money for a fix, and Johnny told Mickey that he would meet him by the marina.
Mm-hmm.
Just as Johnny is about to leave, there's a knock at the door. The woman introduces herself as Sandy Hamilton, Jenny Hamilton's sister. She tells him that she doesn't want him to find Jenny. She asks how much he was paid. $1,000, he tells her, and Sandy offers him $2,000, calling him Mr. Wade. He corrects her that it's Wad, and tells her that he'll take the $2,000, but that wasn't all that he was paid. He had also gotten some extra incentive. She asks what kind of incentive, and he answers, a piece of ass. Sandy tells him that she's sure she's much better, and Sandy takes off her jacket, revealing her breasts, asking if her breasts were as beautiful as hers, to which he responds, no. She finishes undressing and spreads her legs, asking Johnny, was her bird this beautiful? To which he again says no. Sandy lays back on the couch, caressing her body and playing with her clit as that drummy music kicks in again. Johnny undresses. We get close-ups of Sandy's vagina as she gyrates her hips and plays with herself. Now, doesn't this juicy cunt turn you on? She tells him that she's going to give him head better than Bellamy ever could. Sandy starts to suck and stroke Johnny's cock, which is not erect at first, but quickly gets firmer. Does she make you blow your wad, Johnny Wad? He tells her yes, and if she keeps doing that, she will too. More money, better head? Johnny is impressed by this. He tells her to suck it, and she indeed does, stroking his shaft with her hands as she sucks. She tells him he tastes good, and he tells her she feels good, and that they're made for each other. She then tells him, let's fuck, baby, and Sandy mounts Johnny's cock cowgirl. He fucks her from below for a bit, and then Sandy turns around and rides Johnny reverse cowgirl. She rides him for a bit with Johnny reaching around to play with her clit a bit as she goes. We cut to Johnny fucking her doggy style. Johnny says, even rich girls like it dog style. Sandy tells him, yeah, we're all bitches. Johnny fucks her doggy style for a little while. Sandy asks if she's better than the other girl, and he tells her, a lot better. He bangs her hard for a bit longer and then pulls out to come all over her back. They moan and caress a bit more. And this was a bigger load than the first one. For those keeping track of wads. We got to Johnny's car, pulling out of his garage and taking off. Johnny pulls up to the marina and gets out of his car, meeting with his contact, Mickey the Mooch, who is played here by Bob Chin.
Yep, that's him.
But it's a shot from far away. We don't hear anything, and we can barely see him.
But I know what he looks like. He's right here on the cover.
But they talk for a moment, and Johnny gets back in the car and returns home. Johnny picks up the phone and places a call that we don't hear. In narration, Johnny tells us that after a few days of legwork, he figured out that the only person who could be involved is Jenny's mother, Mrs. Hamilton. We hear him tell her on the phone that he knows she's involved and to get her ass over there.
Oh.
So he doesn't even go see her. He's just like, come over here.
Yeah, this movie should have been called Everybody Comes to Johnny's. He's kind of a terrible detective.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, I guess he's figured something out, but he's not pounding the pavement the way he should be. Even the detective in Take It Out and Trade was going out and, you know,
spending the family's money to fly around.
He's just getting drunk and hopping in his Oldsmobile and just tooling around town for a little bit and talking to his junkie friends.
Yeah. This is why you should have a job as a private detective.
I think I could be one after seeing this. If he can do it, anyone could.
Yeah. We cut to Mrs. Hamilton telling Johnny that with all the furs and diamonds she has, she could never be involved with something like this. She's worth millions. Johnny tells her that today someone paid him $1,000 and had sex with him to look for her daughter. Then someone paid him $2,000 and had sex with him to not look for her daughter.
What does he mean today? I thought it was several days.
So, that is true, and that is exactly what the dialogue said.
All right.
In both cases.
Yeah, I know. I just, yeah.
So, yes. He asks her how much she'll offer him. And
if he would lay off the fucking hooch, he wouldn't have this much trouble.
I know. So she offers him $5,000, and then she adds, if that's not enough, she's not too hard to take herself, adding that when she walks down the street, people call out to her. She offers to show what she can do and gets down and starts to lick and suck Johnny's cock.
So he doesn't quite explain what happened.
Uh-huh.
But, he was saying that this scene in particular is like the filming went off as planned, except for a couple of slight wrinkles. The first one was that the woman that scheduled to play the mother was a no-show.
Mm-hmm.
And the person they sent over instead was more like a grandmother than a mother. So, like, I guess they sent like a very old person over, which seems strange given the work they were going to be doing.
Sure.
Maybe the agency wasn't in on it, or maybe this was just like a very old prostitute
or sex worker.
I don't know. But apparently John Holmes was not down to have sex with her and was like, he's like, bro, I don't think I can do it. So there was some sort of switch out made, but I don't understand. It doesn't really explain what happened.
Okay.
Yeah. Why, like, how, like, who switched out or what? Because this woman doesn't look, like, particularly ancient.
She's definitely older.
Right. But, like, she could be mother-aged.
I mean, mother to, like, a 20-year-old, sure.
Right, yeah. And that's what we have, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the way they describe it, they sent over someone who would have been, like, in their, like, 60s or 70s.
Right. So Mrs. Hamilton asks Johnny if he's ever had anyone do this to him, and he tells her there's always a first, but she's just blowing him, so I don't know. He tells her that she is very good, though. She adds that her husband taught her when she was 15, and after that,
what you're about to do is against the law in Alabama?
Actually, probably not.
No. After that, his best friend taught her. So she continues to suck. She asks him, you're not going to turn me in, are you? And he tells her no. She should be free to do this, her best work. They slide Johnny's pants the rest of the way off, and she sucks his cock and rubs his balls more. Mrs. Hamilton stands up and slides off her dress, then begins to remove her boots and stockings. She unbuttons her shirt, then slides off her panties before going back to suck Johnny's cock. We have a hard cut to Mrs. Hamilton asking him if he's ever seen a woman get off with a bottle, adding that this is what she does at home alone sometimes. So we see Mrs. Hamilton start to fuck herself with a glass bottle.
I must have dozed off by this point.
I believe this is a Pepsi bottle. Back in the days of glass Pepsi bottles.
I'll catch it when I get the screenshots. Don't worry.
She adds, sometimes when a man isn't around, this comes in handy. We watch her fuck herself with the bottle for a bit. Johnny sits up next to her and takes over fucking her with the bottle as she strokes his cock with her hand. Eventually, she announces that she's coming. She asks Johnny to promise that he'll drop the case. He says that he won't promise, but he'll think about it. Mrs. Hamilton says that's not good enough. Then we cut to some shots of the beach, and then cut back to Johnny once again getting in his car and driving around.
Is Johnny on the beach, or is it just some shots?
We just get some, like, transitional shots to the beach, and okay. Johnny is leaving his house and getting into his car.
Okay.
But we see a woman then running from a man.
So we have transitional shots of him from his house, from being in his house.
To out of his house. To a beach. Although we eventually get to the beach.
Okay.
So we see a woman running from a man, and Johnny sees this and turns his car around to intercept. We see Johnny sprint out to catch the woman being chased by the man, and they run out to the beach. So he chases after them, and the man chasing the woman has a cane sword. Not in the cane, pulled from the cane, but it's got like the handle that's perpendicular to the sword itself.
Yes.
Johnny catches the man, and they wrestle around and brawl in the sand. The man grabs his cane sword and goes to plunge it into Johnny, but the woman wrestles it away from the man, and then apparently in all this kerfuffle, Johnny kills him with the cane sword.
Yeah.
Then they throw the cane sword into the sand, and it just sticks there upright, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. They did. I think they did some of that in the Casanova things. I think maybe like
swords
got up thrust. It's always cool.
Yeah.
Love a little sword play.
So the woman that Johnny caught here just happens to be Jenny, the woman that he was looking for. So they run off, and we see Johnny sit Jenny down at his home. She tells him that a man grabbed her while she was shopping, and he locked her up in a room and beat her and raped her. We then cut away to a shot from earlier of the kidnapper yelling at her for being a rich girl. He tells her that he wants to see her body and tells her to sit still. He slowly peels off her clothes as she kind of twitches and tries to get away.
I will say, I feel like one thing they kind of figured out in porn films later is you either everyone gets undressed like at once, or you kind of cut to everyone being undressed.
Yeah.
I feel like in this film, you watch them undress each time.
Yeah.
It's a pacing nightmare.
She asks who he is, and he tells her it's none of her concern. He tells her to spread her legs and begins to finger her and kiss her legs. She tells him to let her go, and he tells her to be quiet. She tells him he won't be able to get away with this. He doesn't seem too concerned, but she tells him that she hates him. So the kidnapper grabs Jenny and tells her to see if she can get this thing up. She tells him no, but he insists, and she starts to suck his cock. He peels his shirt off. Through the scene, there's a dog barking in the background. That dog has been dead for many years.
Aw.
The kidnapper tells Jenny that she's not bad and to keep doing it as she continues to suck his cock. After a bit, the kidnapper pushes Jenny down and mounts her missionary. He pulls her on top of him and fucks her from below for a few minutes. He eventually pulls out and comes as he grinds against her crack. We cut to Jenny talking to Johnny. She tells him that she eventually clubbed the guy over the head and escaped, and that's when Johnny saved her.
So he really did just solve this case by, like, happenstance.
Yes. Johnny tells her that he's a private dick, but tells her that he has bad news. Her mother had her kidnapped. Jenny says that she's very thankful and asks how she can repay him. He tells her she'll think of something. She just has to put her mind to it. They lightly kiss, and she more or less immediately reaches into his pants and pulls out his schlong and begins to suck on it.
That's wonderful. I did see a lot of this. I think I might have like missed like the only exciting part of the film.
Yeah.
John Holmes and his cane sword fight on the beach.
And the bottle fucking.
Yeah, I think I've missed. Yeah, I missed the only like fun parts.
Our operatic piano music kicks in. She continues to suck and lick his cock for a bit. We cut to Johnny finger fucking Jenny while he licks her clit, and this goes on for a few minutes. And then we cut to a silhouette of Johnny and Jenny kissing on the beach. And then we get our card that says the end.
Beautiful.
And that was the tale of Johnny Wadd. Yeah. Or at least the first tale. But not the last. Thankfully.
I feel like I'm not up to properly review it because I dozed off, but I feel like I saw enough of it
that, you got the gist of it.
I think I caught the spirit of the film.
Yes.
I think I'm going to be able to, I put an asterisk next to this one, but I think I'll be able to do it.
All right. Well, we'll,
But having seen that in pre-review remarks, what baffles me is that, Bob Chen didn't think much of this film. Like they released it and that was kind of it. And yeah. He's like, boy, I don't want to work with that guy again. But then the distributors started calling and we're like, when's the next WAD film coming out? So, public demand created this.
Yeah. You did this, America.
Yeah. People saw this and they're like, we want more of that guy. So I was trying to put myself in like a 1971 mindset as much as I could, being thinking like, this is the first time I've seen a dick this big that wasn't on a horse.
Yeah.
But that's not true for me. Because I've seen his dick before.
Right.
So it was kind of a hard one to get.
It would also probably be like one of the first narrative porn films you've seen.
Right. I think we should have covered this one first. This should have been the first film we did.
Yeah.
We started with like the highly sophisticated version of this with
oh yeah,
Dixie Ray Hollywood star.
It is similar in that sense.
Yeah.
We talked about that for 2.5 hours and we did not talk about this for 2.5 hours.
We're getting up there. I sense that we've been talking for at least 120 minutes.
At least, yeah. So
but it's like this podcast is a lot like a Paul Thomas Anderson film.
And it should be more like a Paul Thomas film.
Well, next week, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
Right. We'll go to a quick break, and then we'll be back with our final thoughts. Moses, he wrote the law. And I wrote
the Raincoat Review.
Johnny Wad. Johnny Cum Dump. Johnny Apple Seed. I don't know. This is like you mentioned, a very early narrative porn film, similar to a lot of the other ones we've covered from around this time, where that narrative does leave a lot to be desired.
Think about the fact that this came out around the same time as like An Act of Confession.
Yeah. What was the other one? Was it called The Big Snatch?
That was a movie that we covered. Yeah.
Is that what the... Sorry. There's so many movies called The Big Snatch. Okay, yeah, it was or something like that. Like, there were, like, gangsters. That was also a 1971 one.
Yeah. Just
think about most films from 1971. And,
The Bird with the Crystal Plumage?
Yeah. This one's up there with that, and it's psychological complexity.
Yes.
And its use of sound to relate elements of the story.
Sure.
No, I don't know. Overall, it was fairly dull. I think that, like you said, you know, it was like his like first kind of attempt at this sort of thing, and we definitely know he gets better.
Right.
It's, I think, probably about on par with all of those early Anthony Spinelli films we've covered.
Yeah, yeah.
And just kind of, not quite trash, but kind of disposable sort of things. They weren't really trying to do like a whole lot with them in the way that people would be like even a few years later.
Yeah.
Just kind of churning out like an 70 minutes to crank your hog to. And this one had the biggest hog of all for a time.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, mixed some crime noir elements, though very lazily in this one. I do have to assume they get much better.
Yeah.
If not much better, then at least marginally better.
Right.
They made 9 of them, you know, so.
Yeah.
Something happens. I have a book here. If all that happens in this book is John Holmes just hanging out at home drinking, I'm going to lose it.
Drinking and yelling at people to come over.
Yeah. I kind of like that. That's kind of funny. But, like, he's going out to meet his... Like, he's supposed to be going out to meet Bob Chin on the beach or whatever.
Mickey the Mooch.
And Sandy just kind of comes over. I feel like there's an opportunity there to have him go out in the world and kind of have her, you know, like, just do a little more, like, building. Make it hang a little bit more on this loose frame.
Right.
But like I said, everyone just sort of comes over to John Holmes's place. When I kind of woke up and saw the rape scene going on, and then her just talking about, oh, how lucky she was to come him to run across her. I thought literally that was like them describing what had happened. I didn't know that, like, that's because I thought that scene wasn't in the film.
Mm.
So I thought all of that happened off camera.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So knowing that there's, like, at least a little drama or something in the middle of it, that makes me feel a little bit better. But I probably won't go back to this one again anytime soon.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'd give it, like, a maybe, like, a high 1.5.
Okay.
I wasn't super impressed while I was awake. And it doesn't sound like I was going to be too more impressed when I was not.
Fair enough.
Was not.
Should you have been awake?
I don't think so. I think sleep is good for the body and good for the soul.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to pop.
Your turn.
All right. Well, I appreciated it for what it was, but at the end of the day, yeah, it's not a great film. I think that there was a lot of stuff in the film that I found charming about it, but...
To, like, him yelling at her to get over there.
Right. You know, just thinking about his effectiveness as a private detective is pretty funny to me, and him just, like, drinking and then... driving around the block a little bit and just the same thing happening over and over again. And I have to say that the fight, including a death by sword, is pretty funny to me. And the bottle scene was, if nothing else, something unique to throw in there. I'm going to give it 2.5 stars.
You give it 2.5 and see what happens.
All right. Yeah. I give it 2.5 stars. There was enough that, like, I enjoyed watching it, but I'm definitely not going to watch it again anytime soon.
But we will be watching Flesh of the Lotus.
We will, in the near future, be watching Flesh of the Lotus.
But not next week.
No.
Next week, we've got something else coming.
No.
Yes. Oh, no?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh.
Yes, we do have something different coming next week. We're going to... get a little bit more classical. In the meantime, though, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Raincoat Report. Raincoatreport@gmail.com if you need to email us. We already plugged our Patreon, so join us there.
I was reading about John Holmes farting in Flesh of the Lotus.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He's just ripping one. I think so. I don't know. I accepted the stares with a straight face and was glad that he had not decided to follow the burp with one of his super loud farts as well. I don't know. I don't know who's who. Oh, I guess George. Maybe it's George who's farting. Yeah, George is farting, and John's on the receiving end.
He's the one who has to deal with the aftermath.
Yeah, he's the one who has to deal with the belches and the farts. So that's
identify with Johnny Wadd here.
What are you saying?
In the meantime, if you're going to go on your most dangerous case, and by that, I mean play some phone calls and threaten people to come over or else.
Yeah.
Don't forget your raincoat.
Yeah. If you're going to drive drunk, don't forget your raincoat.